Welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast about science fiction TV and film that features actors, writers, and directors of color.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
My name is Maggie.
And I'm Melissa.
And today we are doing Sense8 Episode 7, WWN Double D.
That's a fantastic episode name.
Yeah. If you know what that is without looking it up, mad props to you, because I had no idea what that was.
Neither did I. Even though I've actually watched the episode before, I still didn't remember.
I mean, I know if it's WW, it's like, what would blah, blah, blah do, right? But the fact that they didn't say WWNDD, instead they said WWNDD, kind of threw me. So, like, I didn't even try to decipher who or what that was. I was like, I'll let the episode handle that for me.
And it did. Thanks, episode.
So, this episode was jam-packed with a lot of stuff going on. A lot of action.
Yeah.
I feel like it was pretty balanced, actually, in terms of how much stuff we got from everyone. I don't think anyone got too neglected or thrown in the corner, really.
Yeah, everyone got something substantial, pretty much. Not too much happened on Will's end, but we definitely got developments in his story as well. It's funny, because usually when I write notes for Sense8, I'll write some plot stuff, but I'll write other stuff too, like shots that I like and locations that I like. This time, I didn't write much of that at all. It was all just like plot. Because, like,
I was, like, the exact opposite. I was, like, I wrote down a lot of, I mean, I did write down some plot stuff, but I wrote mostly, oh, this shot looks really nice. I like the colors in this shot, blah, blah, blah.
Then we'll balance each other out then, I think. You know,
to echo what Amanita and Nomi were saying, we are such a good team.
Yeah, we are.
We have, like, a good balance, you know?
And a good rapport.
Okay, so...
Now that we're done complimenting ourselves.
Narcissist cast, Okay, so let's go to, I guess, shall we start with Nomi? Or who do you want to start with?
Nomi's fantastic.
Okay. Well, Nomi's, like, she's in the beginning and end of this episode, so...
Yeah, she gets a lot more to do in this episode, which is so nice, because she has just been kind of... running around with her head chopped off for most of the show. No idea what's going on. She spent a few episodes in the hospital. Like, she's... I wouldn't call her plotline boring, but she hasn't had a lot to do, especially in terms of plot importance yet.
Yeah, she had, like, no agency earlier, so it's really nice to see her, like, actually have... like, take agency and take control of the situation and go out there and freaking call Whispers or... Dr. Matheson or whatever his name is.
Either works.
Take charge. Like, it's really nice to... Because that's the thing, right? Like, we talked about this before. Like, it's nice to see competent characters.
Absolutely.
Unless you're doing the whole incompetent, like, shtick where, like, it's, like, more like a screwball comedy. But that's not what we're covering. So, yeah, no. Okay. So, yeah, Nomi has a lot to do in this episode. We start off with... and my hunch was right that she was going to do some major hacking biz.
Do you know anything about hacking?
Nope.
Neither do I.
I know that, fun story, I know someone who knows someone else who works for the, I think, Department of Defense or something, some kind of government agency. And this person that I know had problems with her computer, so one day she just asked, her government friend to, like, help her solve her computer problems. He asked her to read him some, like, serial numbers off her computer. She did, and he was able to, like, move everything on her computer. Like, control the mouse from, like, millions of miles away. That's some crazy-ish right there.
Well, I don't think it was millions of miles away.
Well, not millions of miles away, sorry. The sun. Sorry.
No. I got what you mean. I'm just being a jerk.
Yeah, you are. but yeah, like, he was able to control her computer from, like,
That's pretty disturbing. I mean, it's not surprising, but it's disturbing.
Oh, not at all. I mean, NSA, all that jazz. Didn't the whole NSA Snowden thing happen, like, a year before Sense8 came out? Like, so, like, you know. I think we're all jaded individuals now.
But yeah, it's all on the public mind right now.
Yeah, we're pretty jaded now as a country about our public security.
I'd like to think we were jaded before, but it was like an ignorant jaded.
We had our suspicions, but then then you really couldn't deny it after the whole NSA thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's stop talking about this.
No, but I guess the question that I was really asking was, do you know if any of this stuff that they're talking about is, legit? I have no idea.
Right,
if
they could be totally making up. Yeah, the name sounded a little
weird.
Much, but honestly, I couldn't tell you if these things were real or not, because, I don't know, people make weird names up for, all sorts of things. So, I have no idea how legitimate these names for this equipment was. I mean, we all know the Wachowskis have been very interested in hacking.
Yeah.
It's been a theme in their works before, so presumably they know what they're talking about, but...
Well, I was gonna say, presumably they know that not enough people know it about hacking, so they just made stuff up.
That's also true.
I don't know. I actually looked it up. I tried to find information on it, and... could not find anything, because everyone else who is watching the show also knows nothing about hacking.
But you can't... No one who... There's never been a person who knows about hacking who's watched a show who's talked about the names? Ever?
I don't know. Maybe people want to keep their hacking identities on the DL.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's not... You know, it's not all... Not all hackers are bad hackers. There's, good hackers. And, great... it's black hat or white hat or gray hat or something.
Purple hat.
After the whole color coordination of Westerns.
Yeah.
Do you remember that plot point in Heroes, for 2 seconds, where it was if you have a black hat, you're evil, aka Siler?
No, I don't.
I only remember... How do I remember this and you don't? I saw Heroes, every once in a while, and I remember this. Anyway, the whole thing with hacking is, there's shades of gray in terms of morality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, some people hack for the greater good, I guess.
Hacktivists.
You would say. Yeah, I guess. Hacktivists. I think our university actually has some kind of hackathon every year.
Yeah,
they
did.
That sounds weird. Hackathon.
They do. I mean, presumably it continued after we left.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, yeah. So, I don't know about the whole legitimacy of the hacking terms, but... I love the lighting in that scene. It was gorgeous.
Everything about that scene was, perfect. It was beautiful, the location, the lighting, the absolutely everything. It was so good. And,
the lighting made Amanita's hair look super good. I was, jealous. I was oh, my God.
Hair goals.
Your hair looks so great. Hair goals, seriously. Yeah. That was a good scene. I don't know how I feel about what's-his-face. What?
Bug.
His name is Bug?
That's his nickname, I think.
Oh. I thought it was something else.
Bugs.
Okay, but, yeah, anyway, the weird hacker guy who hacked into the Pentagon or whatever.
Right.
He was a strange character. But I feel like you always have those weird characters. Kind of throwback to our Children of Men episode.
I thought the same thought.
I'm glad we had the same thought. There's always that one guy. That one guy.
I couldn't even remember his name, so I wasn't even going to bring it up. But yeah, he's that guy.
The prison guard in Children of Men. He's just kooky, off the walls, kind of dangerous, and you don't want to mess with them, but they're kind of crazy, so you kind of just let them be. Just there's always that one guy, and he was that guy in this episode.
Yeah, and he was just really awkward with Nomi.
Really
it doesn't seem like he knew. Well, he did know, but he'd forgotten that she transitioned.
Well, we don't know at what time period she transitioned. So what I assume was that she transitioned after the whole hacking.
No. Yeah, I got that.
Right.
But he should have known. He didn't seem that surprised. It felt more like he had forgotten. He had known it at some point, but he just pushed it out of his head because he wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely a weird character, but, I don't think he reacted, super badly to her, if you know what I mean. He wasn't,
He didn't try and kill her.
He didn't try to kill her, so that's good. It's a good start for this episode. And also, what I meant more was, he wasn't, I wouldn't say he was, like, overly transphobic or anything, if that makes sense.
No.
Like, he was just a weird dude.
Well, I mean, I feel like he was more, like, subtly transphobic. Because, like...
Yeah, I can get behind that. He was, like, subtly transphobic. Because,
like...
You could see, like, the gears turning in his head when he was thinking about stuff, and it was, like...
Yeah, it was kind of awkward. Like, and it's... A lot of the times, like... Trans issues get boiled down to whether you would have sex with them. And that's pretty awkward and weird and bad.
Yeah, and then that did come out a lot in this episode. I mean, in this... Sorry, this rather the scene. Not this episode. That wasn't the main focus episode. But yeah, like... It was nice. I mean, like, obviously... I'm not trans, so I can't speak for anyone, but it was kind of nice to see a side of, like, this awkward interaction that trans people have to,
right.
You know, have all the time.
Right.
Because, like you said, it's, like, it's always boiled down to, like, oh, whether they would have sex with you or not or something weird like that.
Right, because we've seen a lot of really, really negative interactions, like, with Nomi's family, but we haven't seen kind of the more day-to-day subtleties. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was nice.
The only way I could kind of... Well, no. Let me rephrase. I kind of can connect to that if I look at it from, like, a way that there's, like, racism, like, in-your-face racism, and then there's, like, really subtle racism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know, like, what? Does Tumblr call it microaggressions or something like that? I'm not a fan of the term microaggressions, but, like, I mean more, like... There's, like, very subtle racism, and to me, as someone who's not white, that kind of racism almost bothers me more than, like, in-your-face racism, because at least in-your-face racism, like, this person knows they're racist.
Right.
Like, but, like, people who are, like, subtly racist, they actually don't realize they're racist, and it's, like, and if I were to say to them, wow, what you said was kind of, horrible, they'd be like, oh, what? No, I didn't mean it like that. I'm like, yeah, okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think it was nice to get a look of the nuance, and especially when this series is already so jam-packed with so much stuff going on, it's nice to, you know, get more, a more personal side of things. And we get more of that with, like, you know, Leto, too, has that development with what's going on with his storyline and everything.
Yeah.
But we'll get to him soon. So, back to Nomi. She, has decided to hack into Metzger's phone.
Oh, wait.
At the
one
cafe,
quick
right?
thing.
Oh, you want to talk about?
About Go Bug. Ahead. Okay, so, I don't know if this is just me, but, like, didn't he kind of talk like Quinn from Into the Badlands?
I did not make that connection, I don't know.
Especially, like, towards the end. Like, he had this crazy glint in his eye, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling the Quinn.
Oh, did he have a Quinn look or something?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe the accent?
I think it's just, like, creepy white predator dude. Sorry. Sorry, for lack of a better term.
I mean, I guess. Maybe.
I mean... He's supposed to be a sleazy, creepy kind of character. I mean, he freaking hacked into the Pentagon and had a teenager take a fall for it. I mean, come on.
That's pretty... I mean...
That's kind of bad.
Yeah, that's kind of bad.
That's kind of bad. I mean, I'm just glad nothing happened to Nomi.
Yeah.
When she was a kid and it was just community service or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, if this is some guy who thought it was cool for a teenager to take the fall for hacking into the Pentagon, I don't know about that. I don't know. I mean, but, you know, it worked out. They got the equipment. And we get a little bit of interaction with Amanita's mother.
Right.
Whose name I do not know. I think her story about, like, losing Amanita in the crowd, for some reason I thought that was going to be, like, mirrored in the scene where Kala gets lost in the crowd, but then it never happened, so, like, I guess that didn't really work.
I had the same expectation, because it was just like, oh, look, child gets lost in crowd, and then it never really delivers on the same kind of thing. It just, it goes in
it delivers something
completely different directions, which is okay, I guess, but...
Which is okay,
We both picked up on it, that it kind of set up this mirror image, and it never really did anything with it.
Yeah, there were other mirror images going on in this episode, but that wasn't one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, but so like, we... Yeah.
No, just saying that, you know, Nomi and Amanita, Amanita's mother, I mean, they're all taking things in, like, stride now, and they're like, yeah, everyone heard voices in the 60s. No big deal. I'm like, okay.
everyone was on drugs?
I mean, that's like, what they were saying.
Kinda. I mean, I get it. Like, this ties back to the whole conversation started in the previous episode about, you know, evolution and things aren't impossible and fate and God and blah and blah. Like, so it's, like, kind of just, like, more like an...
It's more of the same.
I don't know. More of the same, like, Nomi, stop freaking out. Like,
yeah, I mean, the drugs theme has definitely been running throughout as well. Drugs are good, yay. They help you reach potentials and things like that. Kids,
yeah,
do drugs.
Right, so we get some interplay with Amanita and her family. And then we go on our little mission.
I loved it.
I love the mission. And sorry, before we get to the, like, before we get to the mission in the house, let's, or the,
well, apartment, I was, let's, I, do... I lumped it in all together.
It was great.
From the moment it was that great. They went to the coffee shop to go visit Metzger. It was, yeah, just like they were sleuthing and it was awesome.
It was, don't we all love a good sleuthing?
It was just so good, you know?
It was good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I loved it. I mean, we have... Actually, you know, there's two coffee shops in this episode. There's a coffee shop with Kala and Wolfgang,
oh, yeah,
and then this coffee shop here. But we have them sleuthing in the coffee shop. The only thing they were missing was, like, a newspaper with two little holes cut out for eyes, honestly. Like, you know. Mm. So... Nomi hacks into the public Wi-Fi or whatever, and Metzger uses it, and she's able to intercept his call. And it was very eerie how that all kind of happened all at the same time. But I guess that's kind of how Sensei works. Like,
yeah,
it just happens like that. Very suspect that, like, Metzger has been to, like, all the cities where all the Senseis have been. It made me think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't watch those seasons, really, but, like, didn't Heroes have a thing where some person was, like, injecting people and stuff? So, like, does that make... Am I making sense? Or am I completely misremembering what happened in that show?
Well, I feel like that's kind of a trope in shows or media, yeah, like this.
Right, sci-fi, like, it's actually don't trust anyone.
Yeah, I mean, there was a not-so-great movie called Push with Chris Evans. Shout out if anyone knows that reference. but that, it's kind of the same thing. It's like people trying to suppress, you know, differences, essentially, in people. And trying, you know, so the infection doesn't spread. Not exactly in that way, but...
The time-honored sci-fi trope.
I mean, you know, X-Men. I don't know if they've done it exactly in Heroes, but...
You know, it's not a trope name, but it's a Wikipedia article, and I'm pretty sure it's called, like, Tall Poppy Syndrome or something, where it's, like, the people who are different get cut down, metaphorically cut down, so they're like everyone else. Pretty sure it's called Tall Poppy Syndrome or something
if
like
everyone
that.
If everyone is special, nobody is.
You know what's a great sci-fi short story?
What?
Harrison Bergeron.
Oh,
I'm probably the
yeah,
last
I know.
Name, but I love that short story.
I know what that is, yeah. I've
I like
read
that.
I
like that one a lot. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, we found one extra. Oh, before we go back to Metzger, they also visited Niles.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't remember if that was before or after the coffee shop.
That was before.
Okay.
And Niles had the surgery done to him. Apparently, Metzger's done the surgery 3 times, and two of them died.
Two people have died.
And Niles is catatonic. Yeah. Not really freaks Naomi Niles, out, obviously.
I have seen that actor before, but I don't know where.
I don't know. I didn't recognize him.
Did you get
that
sense? I feel like I've seen him before, but I have to look him up. I guess if I figure it out, I'll try to put it in the show notes. But Niles was creepy. You have the classic staring at the TV screen. And props to them saying, you know, that... Well, Almanita says later on that... She says later on that, what, he's been turned into a zombie. Pretty sure he was watching Night of the Living Dead on that TV.
Oh, really?
Pretty sure.
I didn't catch that.
Also, I mean, I haven't watched it, but I'm fairly sure it was that movie because it was black and white. They were setting fire to something. And also that movie is, like, one of the few movies in, like, the public domain because they, like, screwed up the copyright or something. So, like, anyone Thanks, can guys. Use it for anything. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Night of the Living Dead, or I'm pretty sure. So that was a really nice, I really liked that. It was a nice touch. Like, he's been turned into a zombie, he's watching a zombie movie, Amanita mentions it, like,
yeah,
well done. So that was a really sad and disturbing scene, and I definitely felt for Naomi, because, like, this is horrifying.
Yeah.
There's a doctor who... could have potentially killed her if he operated on her, or she is gonna become catatonic, which is equally as bad. Like,
yeah,
this is, none of these options seem very good. So,
well, nobody makes Amanita promise her that she's not gonna end up like that, which kind of a could be a hard promise to keep, but you know, I trust in Amanita.
I trust Amanita. She burned down a hospital, or almost burned down a hospital. She tried to burn down a hospital, but she failed. But, you know, like, she would go to so, like, great lengths to do anything for Naomi. So, I have placed full faith in Amanita. But, yeah, I don't personally think that any of the Sentinels are gonna die in this season, mm-hmm. but I could be wrong. I think everyone's gonna make it out alive, but you never know.
Yeah. There was a moment where Naomi is, like, hacking, and she just goes, "I'm in." And I'm just like, really? Okay, if you have to say it, I guess, because you can't hack without saying that you're in. I've learned that.
It's so bad. Who came up with that trope?
I'm in.
I mean, it's not really even a trope. It's more like a... Any kind of heisting of anything, you're going to say, "I'm in."
Well, I feel like it works specifically really well for hacking because you don't know if they're in or not. Because, like, if it's a heist thing and you're trying to break into a building, we all know when you get in. But, like, hacking is just nonsense science in, like, TV and movies. So we really don't know. We have someone to tell us.
We're all screwed, guys. This is why computer science majors make so much money, because none of us know what the heck we're doing, even though we all carry, like, little computers in our hands called cell phones. Like,
you know,
we're screwed.
Can I be real for a second? Like, when I watch, like, science fiction, like, TV and movies, and it takes place, like, in the far future, and you have these characters having these incredible technologies in front of them, and they have no idea how they work, I always kind of judge them, but I am that person. Like, I think about, like, or the time travel things where you go back in time and you're just like, well, I have all this knowledge from the future, what do I do with it? And you can do literally nothing because you have no idea how anything works. so
true.
That is our lives.
So true. I love the whole, you know, hacking costumes, yay, and then, like, all of a sudden violence everywhere.
Yep.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
Before, you know, people started dying.
Right.
It was a lot of fun.
So that is how we get our title. We get our title because it is "What Would Nancy Drew Do?"
Yes.
And then Amanita has a nice costume change. And
I love the costume change. I also actually really liked her outfit, but, like, I'm like Amanita. I'm always down for a costume change. I'm always down to dress up. Like, that's just, like, that's what I like to do. So I was like, yes, girl. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little, I don't know if it, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, personally. But occasionally I will just get emotional whiplash from this show. Like, just think about Nomi. No one else, just Nomi. We go from having lighthearted conversations about drugs to breaking into this guy's apartment to horrible violence all in this one plot line. And it's just like...
That's the show.
Calm down. It's not like I want the plot to slow down because, oh goodness, it has been a slow plot so far.
Thank God it's moved faster.
Yeah, but like... I don't know how it doesn't always hit the right emotional notes for me, because sometimes I'm like,
yeah, there's a lot of emotional whiplash going on in this show. I mean, I just, again, I said this before, but like, you know, the intro is so emotionally whiplashy because the ominous music doesn't really match up with all the beautiful happy scenes going on. So like,
yeah,
you know, I just roll with it, and you know me. There was that one time, like, remember that time I was like, I kept skipping the commercial breaks, and like, I was flipping back and forth between like The Hobbit and like Toy Story, and everyone I was giving everyone in the room emotional whiplash, and everyone hated me. Like, I don't even care, man. Like, I can deal with emotional whiplash, but I think yes, in general, most shows, it's like the rising and falling action thing, right? So it's not gonna be. It's just gonna be one up. And then one down. It's not going to be a bunch of ups and downs all over the place. So,
yeah,
I think, again, it's like subverting the conventional type of storytelling that we're used to.
Yeah, I think that in this episode, it's really drastic because you're getting some really nice moments of humor, and then the ending is quite violent. But at the same time,
really violent.
I feel like as the show progresses, it's getting better with dealing with that because we kind of know all the situations of all of the characters now. They don't need to set up things anymore, so we can dive right into them. And so you're jumping between characters that you already care about, and so it kind of mitigates some of the whiplash because you're just jumping into stories that you already know and have feelings for.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like flipping between two movies that you've already seen. Like, yeah, there's still whiplash, but it's not as bad as if you were flipping between two movies that you hadn't seen.
I mean, we all kind of basically know how The Hobbit and Toy Story go, so, you know.
You know, yeah.
Anyway. I really liked Metzger's apartment, especially that really creepy painting of an angel at the end of the hallway. That was like... That was perfection. I was like, I don't know why I liked it so... Well, I do know why I liked it so much. It reminded me of a webcomic that I read. But I also liked it because it was creepy and gave a really nice atmosphere to the scene. Because it's that long, dark hallway they're walking into to get to his office. And there's that creepy angel. And it kind of reminds me even a little bit of Angelica. So I was just like...
Work. Ooh. Angelica.
I don't even know what you're referencing, but okay. but you know what I mean? Like, it reminded me of... The person who, as we are reminded a couple times in this episode, who shot herself in the very beginning of this series. So, I don't know. I kind of tied that in with Angelica.
Angelica?
Nope. Still don't know what you're talking about. I really don't know what you're referring to. And then, you know, Metzger enters the apartment.
Well, before that.
Oh,
we get pictures. We get a little bit of snooping into Metzger's life. Who he has a picture with Dick Cheney, so
and has a Nancy Drew book for some reason.
But the Dick Cheney, he must be evil. But I don't know. I feel like that's kind of that. Although that's a subjective statement, it feels objective. You know, like even those of us who aren't. All on the same political spectrum. Dick Cheney is a little evil.
Dude, does anyone really like Dick Cheney? Like,
I'm sure there are people out there. I feel like after he shot his friend, no one took him seriously.
I mean, I could see the Wachowskis having
beef.
Especially having beef, I guess, with Cheney, because wasn't there a whole thing, and again, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there was this whole thing about Dick Cheney's daughter being either, like, bi or lesbian and him disowning her or something along those lines. Maybe I'm mixing him up with someone else, but I feel like that's him, and I'm pretty sure, like, if you're the Wachowskis, you're not really going to look at that favorably. But I need to check myself, because that could be a complete, like, urban legend, myth, made-up online story thing that I read from, like, years ago. So, don't quote me on that. But, I mean, regardless, he's a conservative, so, like, I don't really think...
He must be evil.
No, I don't mean it like that. I mean, like, you know, like, into considering the traditional viewpoints of conservatives, the Wachowskis are probably not going to get behind that, so no. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Anyway.
He also has the Nancy Drew book.
I don't know how I feel about that.
That's such a random thing.
I thought, you know what I thought it was? But then I was like, nah. I dismissed it, like, a couple of minutes later. I thought maybe, like, Whisper, Matheson, whatever, was, like, messing with them and, like, planted the book there. But... that's a little too much thought out and crazy, so, like, I don't think that actually happened. But Matheson slash Whisper seems to know a lot of what's going on.
Yeah.
He seems to know people's names and where they're going to be and blah, 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 blah. So I'm just like, I don't think it's too far-fetched that he could have planted a Nancy Drew book if he overheard them talking about Nancy Drew. But, meh, I don't know.
So then, yeah, Metzger arrives back into his apartment. And the trip that he was supposed to go on, I think, to Chicago. I wonder why he was going to Chicago. So that trip was canceled. And so then he goes back to his apartment and he finds Nomi and Amanita. And, you know, and the reason it was even canceled is because of Nomi's interference at the coffee shop. So,
yeah,
Nomi's digging a little too deep for anyone to be very happy. Except for Nomi.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I didn't really, when she said, oh, he's going to Chicago, let's totally break into his house tonight. I was just like, that guy knows your name. You don't think that he would think that maybe you're going to try to break into this dude's apartment? Like,
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how she didn't really seem to think, oh, maybe they might try to stop me.
Yeah, it wasn't, I wouldn't say it was poorly thought out. Well, actually, no, I think I would say that. It was poorly thought out. I mean, it's a good logical leap that, okay, so Metzger isn't going to be there, and so it's a perfect time to go snooping, but, you know, you've interfered now.
And you've been intercepted.
Right.
They know that you're on to them, so wouldn't they take more security precautions about this guy's house or apartment? Like,
yeah.
Like, no. So that was a bit of a blind spot in terms of their plan. And then so they're threatening Metzger with, like, the mace and the hammer or whatever. Right. Because he's trying to call the police or call for help or something. Then they realize they're all doomed Whispers, whatever, is onto them. All of a sudden, I totally did not expect Niles to jump out of there, but Niles shows up and, I don't even know, like, starts brawling, fighting with Metzger. For some reason, doesn't kill Amanita or Nomi, just kills Metzger and then kills himself, although we see that Whispers is there, which, what's-his-face, Jonas?
Right.
Is warning Nomi about, which is very disturbing and very confusing and very scary. I guess I think my theory is that Niles is part of Whispers' cluster, and that's why he can access and kind of sort of control his movements.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we see his face instead of Niles' face when he kills himself. That's kind of a horrible thing to think about, though, if Niles has just been sitting catatonic in that space and then all of a sudden is just kind of maneuvered against his own will to, you know, kill Metzger and then kill himself. So Whispers is, like,
legit.
If we didn't think Whispers was deranged earlier, we know he's deranged now. Like,
heck yeah.
Dude is slicing heads open and taking over other people's bodies and shooting people and shooting other people in their body. Like, whoa, okay. How did we get here?
Yep.
What is going on? So
Nomi's gotten herself into a little bit of trouble.
Just a tad.
I think she may have gotten in slightly over her head here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely glad that Nomi's taking action, but maybe should have planned this out a little more. I feel like I want her to finally get a connection with a sensate where she actually thinks that they're a real person and stops dismissing them as, like, voices in her head.
Yeah.
Because I feel like with everyone else, they're kind of getting to, oh, you are so-and-so and you live here. Right. Let me actually try to visit you or something. Or at least, like, they know their name and their location. Like, this person's name is Riley and she lives in London. Like,
yeah, something. Some of them are more connected than others. Like, Leto hasn't really had much either.
No, not at all. Leto has no idea what's going on.
Yeah. He just thinks he's going crazy. I mean, and then there's people like Kala, who's pretty much only talking to Wolfgang.
Right.
And Wolfgang's pretty much only talking to Kala. So you've got different levels of interactions across the board, but I really like the ones that are more interconnected and the ones that kind of are starting to figure stuff out, because that's more fun. And
it is more fun.
People aren't really fun to watch when they think they're going crazy.
This is true. This is very true.
That's all I have for Nomi anymore.
Yeah, same here. I like how she had a lot more to do in this episode. But, yeah, she didn't really think this through, did she? So, or, I mean, it's not that she didn't think this through, because she's been thinking for a while, like, what the heck is going on? And she finally acted, but, like, I am very scared for her, so.
I'm very scared for a lot of the sensates right now, honestly.
I mean, some of them are in better positions than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really see. I think Sun's gonna be fine. Sun's gonna be fine. Yeah. Whatever her name is.
Like, who would have thought a few episodes ago that Sun was gonna be in the best position right now?
Right? It's insane. I'm just like, okay, how is she in the best position out of everyone?
And she's in prison.
Yeah. Of the irony.
Do you want to move on to Sun?
Yeah, sure, why not, since we were talking about her. So she has a little, I mean, we all get stuff from all the sensates, but I think she has the smallest role in this one. So she walks into the prison, and she's introduced to her cellmates, and we don't really know what to expect, but they're kind of just welcoming her into their little family of, you know, we have kind of beat in our own weird way men at their own game in some kind of weird, sick, twisted way.
Yeah, I mean, so, let me tell you, like, I was watching them and I was like, I am team prison ladies. Like, not good job, guys, but some of you, good job, guys. I mean, it's kind of hard to know exactly what happened to all of them, but at least the one who killed her abusive husband, I was like, I like you.
Heck yeah.
She put rat poison in his bibimbap.
Bibimbap is pretty tasty. Except when it's poison. Then it's not as tasty.
I mean, I don't know what the flavor of rat poison.
Rat flavor bibimbap. Or rat poison flavor bibimbap. So, I mean, I know I bring these shows up all the time. But I can't help it. They're so all-encompassing and good at the same time. But I had to, I mean, I was thinking constantly, oh, let me compare this in my head to Orange is the New Black. I'm glad that it's not really going that same route, because we don't really need that. But there's definitely similarities, and I don't really know if they were supposed to be similar. We do have the kind of, like, I guess everyone needs to be introduced to their cellmate, so that's kind of an obvious storyline. But we have the whole people are sewing stuff, and I was like, there was a whole plot line about sewing stuff in last season. But anyway, it was kind of nice that we're kind of starting to see, like, the weird social order of things in the prison be set up.
Sun definitely has no time for this.
Nope. I mean, we know she can handle herself in a fight, so I'm not really worried about her. It seems fine, honestly. This person seems a lot better than the one in Orange is the New Black, and that one isn't even that bad, depending on what episode we're talking about, what season we're talking about. So, like, some's gonna be okay.
The whole time that she was with her cellmates, I was just, like, humming, like, Chicago. He had it coming.
Of course you were.
Because reasons. If you'd have been there.
Check the show notes.
You would have probably
I should post that embarrassing video of you singing that song. No, I won't do it.
Anyway.
Anyway. So, Sun is in her weird prison family thing unit now.
And she gets a female friend.
I don't know if I'd go that far. But okay, if you want to call her that.
No, and then she definitely gets a friend.
And we also have a... Are you implying that she's not female?
No, I'm saying...
I'm just joking around.
I feel like she hasn't had a lot of BFFs in her day.
I feel like Sun has not been passing the Bechdel test because there just haven't been any women around except for the secretary. So yeah, it's kind of nice to see her interact with other people. She seems so happy in the prison, like when she was drinking her tea. Like, what the heck? Again, it speaks volumes that when we see Sun happiest is like in the place we least expect it. It's really weird. So, we had a little bit of setup with, oh, there's some prison bully who's having other inmates sew the clothes that she's supposed to sew. So, sorry, I said sew just a lot in that last sentence. I think we're going to see Sun throw down in an episode or two. Because that would make me so happy. I want us to see her fight someone again. Because she's awesome when she's a fighter. And I think that's all we get for Sun, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we're just getting a like, kind of bit of a setup for her story. Yeah. So. I hope she gets to meet other sensates. Because it's just Caffeus right now. Which is kind of like...
Mm. Or Riley.
Oh yeah, she did meet Riley in the last episode.
Yeah. I really like... that the different plot lines are getting varying importance throughout the different episodes because in this one Sun doesn't have that much to do. I mean, I love every moment with her. I really like her. But you know, she doesn't have a ton to do in this episode, but she was really important in the episodes preceding it, so it kind of starts to balance out a little bit.
Yes.
I think we're finally starting to see a good chunk of each of the characters and not keep feeling that we're abandoning characters for, like, entire segments.
Definitely. Who shall we move on to next?
Let's do Leto.
Sure. So, Leto, kind of all his plot point things are kind of coming to a head. We have... the three of them, Daniela, Leto, and Hernando, eating at a restaurant with Hernando pretending to be Leto's bodyguard. Which is, I guess, in this episode, really cute in its own weird way.
It's really weird. Their relationship is really weird, but...
But Leto's really weird about the relationship.
No, yeah. Like, Hernando is more game, like, way more game about this than Leto is. Like, Hernando says, I can glower, like, to be the bodyguard, and I was like, oh, I love Hernando.
Yeah. So, they're eating out, and, I mean, this has been set up before. We've seen in the past Leto eating at restaurants, and him kind of getting...
bombarded.
What?
Bombarded?
Yeah, kind of bombarded with either paparazzi or fans or whatever. So, this has all been perfectly set up. This kind of... We've seen Leto at a lot of restaurants, so we know how this goes down.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of blow their cover a lot in this episode, even before we get to the whole photo reveal thing. We have, they kind of successfully pull off their restaurant shenanigans, so they're really happy about it, but then, like, they're kind of making out, right in front of an elevator, and then the elevator opens, and, no, you guys are, like, you know, like... I don't even know how to feel about Leto. I guess it's, like, really weird to be closeted because he's just like, oh, I don't want to, like, show anything, but, like, oh, I'm so happy. And blah. So it's, like, it's kind of hard for him to keep it together. I don't even know what that old guy who stepped out of the elevator thought. But
I don't know. It was a life lesson, once we get, never celebrate too early.
Celebrate in your freaking, like, room or something. Like, please. But, I mean, they've been pretty lax around Daniela. So, again, like, their barriers are kind of starting to fall a bit, which kind of led to a bit to their downfall.
Yeah, I mean, the whole piece of leading up to the scene at their apartment, like, they were so jubilant. I was like, something is going to go wrong.
Right?
Like, they were too happy. Yeah. Stop being so happy. That's when things happen.
Yeah, that's our little hint. We always know, like, when the highs are high, the lows are super low. So they go back to the apartment and...
There's a masked
man.
A masked man. Because that's something people do.
I mean, this dude is crazy.
This guy is
crazy. Like, absolutely insane. So, like, yeah, he would do some crazy stuff like that. I just don't really understand how he got into their apartment.
That's a good question.
I guess when you're maybe a drug lord or whatever sketchy stuff he does, you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So.
And he's sitting there with, like, a cocktail in his hand. He just, like, looks like a James Bond villain. Like. But, like. It's, like.
Sad James Bond villain and desperate and crazy.
Well, you know, like, in a way, he's imitating the villains that Leto has faced in his movies because he's obsessed with Leto and his acting. It's just a really weird relationship because he wants...
That's really true,
isn't it? He wants
to
be Leto. It's really twisted.
It is really twisted. I forgot that the whole thing was that he admired Leto. I kind of forgot that. I remembered that he was threatening him and stuff, but it's so weird, right? Because we just kind of... I feel like this show really plays with our expectations. I mean, sometimes it's pretty cut and dry, but sometimes it's really twisted, and it's like, this guy, we keep thinking he's going to, like, or I kept thinking he's going to, like, kill or threaten or something to, like, Toledo or Hernando or someone. But he keeps going towards, like, this weird twisted thing where he wants to be him, and it's just really strange.
Yeah, because he wants to watch them having sex. And that's pretty twisted.
Why? And he's like, I know it sounds bad. And we're all just like, yeah, it sounds pretty bad, dude. It sounds pretty bad. I mean, I already knew based on the previous episode, they focused too much on, like, the phone and her taking pictures. So I was like, at some point, the pictures are gonna get out. So when we got to the whole thing where... I don't even know. What was it? Like, we see a lot of shots. The camera is very focused on the phone. We see when they're kind of trying to get him to leave the building. Well, no, first of all, we see them enter the home, and Daniela puts a bag down. And the camera kind of stays on the bag for a bit. And then the camera stays on the bag later, too, when they're kicking him out, and we see, like, the phone, and it's kind of, like, you don't really know, because I think things are getting a little hectic in the house when they're trying to kick him out, so I couldn't really keep track of where the phone or where the bag was, but I definitely had a thought, like, did he just take the phone, or did the phone fall outside with him, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, because she,
but they were,
Daniela
they
was
kept
going
focusing
to go
on
call
the phone.
The police.
Right. I was scared too because I was thinking when she was like, I gotta call the police, was he's gonna take the phone and he's gonna see the pictures, which is what happened later. So, the camera was on the phone a lot. So, like, if it wasn't obvious, like, the camera's literally like, look here.
Basically.
And I was like, okay, I get it.
Wait, though, before we move on, Joaquin has this line that he's not the bad guy, he's the sad guy.
Did he actually say that? I think I just, like, completely tuned him out when he said,
like,
that.
Like, what?
You cray.
I'm pretty sure he says that. I'm pretty sure that wasn't just my own notes.
I don't even, like, what are you typing or searching?
I'm making sure that it's really from the show and I didn't just write that as a funny joke. No, he really says that.
He really says that.
I'm not the bad guy. I'm the sad guy.
Oh, dear. Because
that's something people say.
Oh, can I, before we leave Leto, my first note for the episode, for his segment, which I didn't bring up earlier, was when they're in the restaurant and Daniela is saying, oh, yeah, this is great, blah, blah, blah. Like, in just in the music cues, I hear, I paid attention. I thought it was so funny. There was a weird echoing, no, 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 no. In the, during the background of Leto's restaurant scene. I'm not even joking. It's in there. Because it's in the music. It's embedded in the music where she's saying stuff. And, like, you can see the two guys are not, they're not having it. Yeah. It just goes, the music just goes, it's just the theme music. But then it just goes, no, 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 no. It's very subtle, but I caught it. And I was like, this is some fantastic subliminal messaging right here. Like, this is too much. Let me see. Do I have anything else about Leto? I think that's basically it. Do you have anything else about him?
Nope. I mean, so okay. He goes and he is all happy the next morning and he's singing and he's singing Whitney Houston because he's the bodyguard and it's, I get it, it's cute.
It's always that. It's always when they're too happy, you know don't something horrible happy, is going to people. Happen. You know something horrible is going to happen. And, it does. And then we get the whole thing where it's like, did you send me this text? No. Wait, you took blackmail! Ah! Yeah. World is ending. It escalated. No!
Well, I wouldn't say it escalated quickly for us, because we've kind of seen this coming, but it escalated very quickly for the characters. And so when we leave them, Daniela says that she's going to fix everything.
Famous last words.
I know, right?
So, I mean, Hernando's really upset. Leto's definitely shaken. I mean, like, the camera's even shaking a little bit during that scene to give us a sense of, like, the whole turmoil in his head. Things are not looking good for Leto, and I don't know, it's kind of like, what do you do in this situation, because he is such a big name actor with so much to lose, and blackmail is bad. So, like, is he gonna come out preemptively? Probably not, but I don't know how else he would stop the blackmail train from happening.
Yeah,
so. And those pictures were pretty bad. They weren't even, like, you know, it would have been bad if they were kissing, but it was even worse. It was, like, them actually having sex. Yeah. Like, Daniela, you're the worst. Why did you do this? Ugh.
Oh, well.
Ugh.
Riley?
Some people. Riley? Sure, let's go to Riley. So she is on the plane to Iceland, and Caffeus is kind of pops in. He goes, oh, you're so lucky. And she's like, nope, that's privilege. And he's like, yeah, whatever, you're so lucky.
I really liked their conversation. To me, it felt like the pinnacle conversation between an optimist and a pessimist. Like, because he's like, well, no. Riley's like, what if something terrible happens? And Kathy's just like, what if something wonderful happens? And I'm like, that's exactly it. That's an optimist and a pessimist looking at the same situation. And I'm like, I like it.
It is nice. But yeah, like, you can go your life thinking that everything will be horrible, or you can go through your life thinking everything will be great. Or I guess maybe there's some kind of middle ground that people rarely discover. But, I mean, yeah, going back to Iceland, you know, there was, like, that curse or hex or whatever prophecy thing.
Right.
And
I'm pretty sure
he set her father up as too lovable. The father must
die.
Why did it take you like forever to complete that sentence?
Dramatic tension. I feel like the fact that Riley is from Iceland is just an excuse to be like, look how pretty Iceland is.
But we didn't even get to see how pretty Iceland
is. Well, I'm pretty sure we will. And as someone who has seen the show before,
so, like,
I would trust me.
Yeah, no, so she lands in Iceland. Her dad is adorable, playing like a ukulele or something. Bro, I can't even, like, everyone around the father was, like, so, like, bored and deadpan and what. I was like, I feel like people would be, like, clapping and, like, like, how people react to, like, flash mobs before they got, like, overdone. Like, that's what people would have been doing. They would have been like, this is so adorable.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was really adorable. So he greets her at the airport with a song, which is super sweet.
Yeah, I mean, and we see what I call Riley's first smile of the show. Like, we've seen her...
First genuine smile.
Yeah, like, we've seen her, like, smile a little bit before, but, like, this is, like, a first time when we saw her, like, smiling.
Like, genuinely smiling.
And I was like, wow, you really are a pessimist. I mean, compared to, like, what other of your sensates are going through, like, come on. Come on.
Yeah. But she... Again, she understands that she's privileged. She's not, like, completely,
ignorant.
Dense, I guess. Yeah. So, we get to her father's house, and, oh, I love the use of color in the show. Everything in the house, excuse me, everything in the house, including the costumes, were, like, these nice, welcoming, warm, like, you know, off-whites and beiges. Mm-hmm. It was just so comfy and cozy, and her dad's being adorable, playing songs on the piano, and you just know, they're setting up some major heartbreak down the road. Like, that's just what they do. That's what filmmakers and TV shows do. They just make you feel so happy and so, like, comfy, and then they just rip it. They just rip the rug from under you, and everything's horrible. Because it's a sci-fi land, so...
Things will get horrible soon enough.
Yeah, basically. So, we get a lovely interaction between her dad... And Riley and her dad, where, you know, she's like, oh, yeah. Again, the pessimism, right? Like, oh, I just, you know, I play music for, you know, drunk people who want to get laid, and it's nothing, like, cool or good. But then her dad's like, it's basic, playing Beethoven for old people is, like, basically the same thing. So, like, I actually really, really liked that conversation. Like, the whole, like, the contrast between the two things. Like, it's like... listening to music, no matter what mood or age or whatever you are, it's like the same, it's just like two sides of the same coin. Yeah. Like it's like really the same thing, and it's really, yeah, it's really nice, because people do get very uppity about what is high art and low art, but like her dad's like super chill. It's like basically the same thing. I'm getting a bit of a counterculture vibe from her dad, because he has like this like teal earring or something in one ear, and I was like,
I'm getting a lot of counterculture from the whole show.
In the show. But you know what I mean.
No, but like, yeah.
It was a nice kind of nod or hint to, like, the kind of person her dad is.
Yeah. That breakfast looked really good. It was like a breakfast crepe thing. I don't know about food or whatever, but
maybe you're hungrier than me when you
I definitely was.
And then we get a very, very creepy horror film shadowy person in the background going, you shouldn't have come home, or you shouldn't have come here, and that's great. And right after that, I wrote in my notes, the father must die, question mark, because there can only be one thing, because Riley's not gonna die, so like there's really only one other person to go, so yeah, not really feeling good about Riley's dad. Yeah, I mean, that's all I had about Riley. She didn't have too much in this episode.
No, she didn't have too much to do. The warning was a little freaky, and I think, I mean, we don't know that it's a sensate thing. It could just be an other, but when I watched it, I was definitely like, okay. So her little warning, that wasn't just a throwaway thing where she's talking with Sun, you know?
Oh, no. Like, that's definitely not a throwaway thing.
But, like, even where these visions or whatever are coming from, that's going to be delved in a little deeper.
Oh. Because, like, I never thought that was one of the sensates who was behind her. I thought that was someone else. Or something else. But I don't know what.
So I'm not dealing with any spoilers. I'm only talking about what I thought when I was first watching the show, so I may or may not be right, but to me it was like something had hacked into like that sensate part of her brain.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And look, I'm talking about hacking. Haha.
Yeah, I don't. Was there a central theme going on in this episode? I feel like no.
There were a few themes, but central not themes? One central theme. I feel like there was definitely some violence.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. We got a lot of violence in this episode through a number of the different plot lines. I also was picking up on some, like,
You don't want to get to spoiler territory.
I mean, it just, like, I don't know the right way to put it. Like, the inherent... never mind.
You sure you don't want to try to think it through?
Mm-hmm. I mean, because it only really applies to two of them, really.
Okay.
Because between, like, Sun and Nomi, you do get this kind of theme of, like, sexual inequality, if that's the right way to put it. Because, like,
I think so.
Sun is now facing a world of only ladies, and she and a lot of the people there have basically found revenge against men as their only option. Right. And then Nomi also faces kind of, you know, I don't know, microaggression, if you want to put it like that.
Subtle transphobia.
Yeah. But we don't really get that from too much else. Even, yeah, I don't know.
No, I definitely, I mean, there's definitely a reoccurring theme of, like, being a woman is very hard in this world, and that's definitely reflected in this show. Like, Kala has to make some pretty, or I don't know if we're making tough choices, really, is what I would say, but she's kind of walking into a cage, metaphorically speaking. Right. Or I guess she kind of backed out of the cage a little bit, but it's still, the cage is still there.
Right.
And then, you know, Sun has physically actually walked into a prison.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Riley is. Has had men attack her violently in this show. So, like, a lot of stuff is going on.
Yeah.
With gender inequality and things like that. And then, okay, so back to Sun. No, we talked about Sun. Yeah. I'm getting confused as to who we're talking about. We talked about Riley,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I'm done with Riley.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think the shadowy person in the background is hella frightening and... I mean, I know we're going to get some explanation, but, like, part of me doesn't really want to ever see that person ever again. So, I'm just like, yep, this is fine. Burning dog, sitting in a burning kitchen image from Tumblr or whatever. That one. I sound like a crazy rambling person for someone who doesn't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to stop now. I'll throw a link in the show notes. But anyway.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I sound like a crazy person just now. I sound insane. Okay. Okay. We've got to Riley. We've talked about her section. Let's go to Will.
Will sure. really Why not? Doesn't get much to do.
I always get really confused as to where we are in Will's storyline because I feel like he's always sleuthing, but I don't know if he's following the same, like, I guess sleuthing is a bit of a theme in this episode, but I know, because I'm like, is he looking for the Sarah person? Is he looking for Whispers? Is he looking for both?
I think he's...
Are they just weirdly intermingled?
I'm pretty sure he's just trying to figure out what happened to Angelica.
Right. But I get confused because, like... It just feels like we always pick up in the middle of his investigation, so I always get really lost.
It feels like he's just kind of meandering around until he gets more to do. Because we don't really learn anything from his sleuthing. He just does it so he has something, you know, to do.
Well, also, it's just so, like, he knows what's going on. We already know what's going on, but he doesn't know.
Right.
So, like, we see that he's identified the person leaving the building as, I guess, Whispers or whatever his name is. Which just kind of confirms the same old stuff we saw earlier with, you know, the wiped videotapes and things
Nothing
like that.
Nothing felt really new about anything that Will discovered.
Oh, you know what I just thought? One thing that I thought was maybe could be new or a potential connection was we see that in the photos that the young kid has taken, There's a bunch of people with those gas masks that we saw earlier in an earlier episode with Jonas. So if you remember, Jonas is in solitary confinement. Right. And he's dragged out of there by people with gas masks on. Mm-hmm. And we see similarly gas-masked people in the photos.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So what I'm saying is, it's very obvious that Whispers has a hand in whatever's going on with Jonas. Or, I don't know. I think there might be a potential connection, but, I mean, maybe not. Maybe there's some kind of... I'm still trying to piece this show together, too. You know, first time watching and all that. But there's a potential connection there with the gas mask. It's not a gas mask, really. It's more like a hazmat suit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm referring to?
I do. At all?
Okay. I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, I think...
More than I was before.
Will goes to a shady part of Chicago for information.
I loved the atmosphere when the subway passes over the basketball court and just makes that noise and you see it. I'm like, oh, it was so good. I loved it. I loved it. So, yeah, he goes to talk to, I don't know enough about, like, gangs to understand what's going on. So, I feel like I'm, like, piecing it together bit by bit. So, like, I'm assuming they have to get through all these layers of security. And that's what's going on. And then just to talk to this one kid, they have to get through, like, a lot of layers of, like, security, which it would just be people standing in their way and standing behind them and,
yeah,
you know, crowding them.
I mean,
so,
I don't know much about gang culture, but
right.
It really rung false to me.
Something about it seemed very, off.
It didn't feel right.
Yeah, it didn't feel right. It doesn't feel feasible that two cops could walk into a huge group of quote-unquote shady people and leave unharmed. So that was
weird. I don't even know what part of it, like, was the most unbelievable to me. Just the whole setup, and it felt very unnecessary. And I feel like they could have gotten the information some other way. I know it's a nice way to kind of bring the kid from the first episode back, but it just didn't feel important or necessary or...
Yeah,
it
was...
just felt weird.
It was just weird. I'm confused by Will's scene, and also confused because they, like, just the interactions with, like, the gang people don't really make sense to me and don't feel quite right, like you were saying. It's something about it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it doesn't feel very genuine.
Yeah.
It feels really
staged.
Might
just be acting stuff, too. Because, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, something about that, it was just really strange. But, I mean, I don't watch enough, like, police procedurals to, like, make a definitive statement on any of this stuff. Nor do I know how crime actually works in real life, because I'm sheltered. So, like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Something felt very... off about that scene, and I don't know exactly what it was, but something followed.
Yeah, but so eventually, Will gets to the company that they rented the van from,
right.
And so he casually gets around a warrant with a nice threat. So I was like, I see what
Hello.
You did there. And then she
always got to have a warrant.
And then he sees Angelica's body, with her eyes open. And I was like, creepy, that's all we get from Will.
Right. And then Diego keeps thinking that Will's going crazy, because, you know. But yeah, like, if the biggest clue wasn't, this van is even cleaner than it was before, and blah, blah, like, okay.
That is definitely
clearly
suspicious.
Some shady stuff was going down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're done with Will. We have not talked about Kala or Max or Caffius. Let's do Kala and Max.
Absolutely. That sounds wonderful.
They're kind of a pair. I really like Kala's dialogue speech thing mm-hmm. in the temple. It was great. And again, it was kind of a nice little light, humorous kind of thing. I mean, no one in Kala's world is getting brutally murdered. I mean, maybe the other, maybe Wolfgang and other people's worlds, people are getting brutally murdered, but not Kala's world. So it was kind of nice to have a little breather.
Yeah. And I like how she interprets, you know, the sensate world in terms of religion, but it didn't feel, I don't know, ignorant or judgmental to me. It was just another interpretation of the same exact events. And I like the way that she intermingled science with religion.
Yeah, I definitely like that whole speech she gave about, you know, faith versus science and, like, how it's not contradictory but complementary. And I was like, yes, I love it. And, like, Max, dang it, I keep calling him Max. I hate my life. Sorry. I keep calling Wolfgang Max. Super annoying. It's just easier for me to just remember him as Max. Okay. And then Wolfgang is like, not really buying any of this, but I think she explains it well and he understands. And, oh, my OTP! Forever apart. Why? I love their interactions in this episode, though. Like, Kala's choice in clothing is, like, on point, man. Props to wardrobe, because they did an amazing job. I thought, you know, the switching between, like, the scenes with the rain and then switching with the outdoor was great.
That was so especially well done. Because, I mean,
like, I, like, seriously, yeah.
Like, it was obviously, like, filmed, like, a huge amount of time apart, you know?
Yeah.
And yet, it just, it interweaves perfectly.
It feels so right.
It's so good.
You have to put a lot of planning and stuff like that, because without proper planning, that scene would not have gone, like, as good as it did.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I don't know. I had this really funny thought. I'm just going to say it now. Like, did they pick actors that would look amazing in the rain? Because, like, they looked amazing in the rain. I was like, is that how they chose this pairing? Because they both looked awesome. And, like, oh, just that scene. I really like that scene. Yeah, so
the rain, like, it suited both of them.
It really did.
And I liked that, you know, Wolfgang is kind of, I mean, he doesn't come out as, like, an atheist, but he's clearly not very into the religion, and she's very religious, and but they're having a nice conversation about it, and it's really nice, and it's, like, the way, it's just, like, who is responsible for what is going on is up for debate, I guess, because, like, Kala is like, well, you showed up to stop my wedding, so that shows some divine intervention there. And, you know, Wolfgang's like, well, that means like, our connection's divine, right?
That's, like, the cheesiest line, man. Oh my god. But yeah, no, I really just want them to meet, but, I mean, we have what's going on with Wolfgang after. Okay, so first of all, right, they're having this nice conversation, but we get interrupted by Felix.
Right.
So they don't get to kiss, which makes me so sad, but whatever. I guess that's, like, that's how OTPs work, right? No one cares about a romance that can happen easily.
You gotta struggle. You want a romance
that's fraught with tension, that's a struggle, and you have to work for it, and then when you get it, it just pays off that much more. But we have Felix interrupting,
right,
which kind of sucks. And then, you know, they're like, yes, we're gonna be rich, woohoo! And then they go back to their weird headquarters, shack thing, store, and just like Caphias with the bus and the girl, we have Felix with the door and the girl. Except, you know, it's not like someone is stealing their cash. They shoot Felix. So I was kind of surprised that they didn't shoot Wolfgang, because, like, wouldn't they want to shoot Wolfgang?
I mean, they definitely give Wolfgang a look, but...
Well, it's a threat for sure.
Well, it's a look. Duh. It's a threatening look, but Anyway. But
okay.
Felix is the one who's really been in control of selling the diamond, so I'm not sure if they know if Wolking's part.
But wasn't the uncle, like, onto him?
I mean, I think he was sort of onto him, but I don't think he has any kind of proof. It was just more of a gut feeling.
Right. Yeah.
It's...
And then, so I don't know if the jeweler is dead.
Yeah, that was unclear what happened to him. Whether, like, he sold them out or whether he got caught and killed. No, no, no. But, I mean, Felix has been cannon fodder from close to the beginning.
The get-go. Yeah. I mean, I knew Felix was going to die, but I didn't. I thought he was going to screw up really badly or something.
Right.
And that would have led to his downfall. But his downfall was just, oh, look, a pretty woman. Okay. Which is, to be fair, has been brought up before. So, like,
you know. Yeah. It's like one of those little tiebacks. Not like a big moment. Yeah. But it worked for Felix. I don't know how much it worked for me. Because now... Wolfgang, the only person he has a significant relationship with is Kala. Right. So, I mean, that sets up, you know, OTP quite nicely. But, you know, Wolfgang was on his way to, you know, take a trip to India. And now...
Right. And I don't think he's going to do that anymore. Right. Because
things have started to get a little more complicated for Wolfgang. And he had clothes on in this episode. So that is surprising.
He had clothes on in other episodes, like the bathroom scene.
Okay, well,
I'm just gonna argue on his behalf. Whatever. Okay. But... So, any more notes on Wolfgang or Kala?
Okay, a few things. One,
sure.
I want like every kiss to begin with science talk about gravity. Like that was so great talking about the mysterious attraction. I was like, this is good. This
so good.
I may complain about other things, but this. This is good.
Talk nerdy to me.
I also liked the moment where Kala was talking, or she was praying, and she's like, stop sending, not she didn't say stop, but she's like, you sent me visions of a man with a large
...
trunk.
Was his, just so I can go with the whole rhyming scheme, was his junk really that big? Was it really? But anyway,
I mean, she doesn't have a lot to compare it to.
I'm just going to put out a rhetorical question out there, and then I'm going to step back and not address it ever again. So, okay, finally. Oh, wait, no, hold on. I have one more note about Kala. What am I saying?
Yeah.
That gorgeous scene where she's a little kid, and we talked about it before, the crab.
Right,
scene.
That was so awesome.
That was super cool. I don't quite know. I thought maybe for a second because I was thinking... I was in the, I guess, brain space thinking mode of, oh, Asian dramas. And by this, I also mean South Asian dramas where, you know, could this little kid who drags her off be like, I don't know, a love interest or
okay,
something?
Let me,
maybe it's
my note was
face.
Hashtag real first love. So I definitely picked right? up on that. I was like, oh, goodness gracious, I've been destroyed.
But no, yeah, that's because I've been trained
right, exactly.
to like. Recognize that, oh, if you meet someone really adorable when you're a small child, they obviously have to be your soulmate. So I was like, wait a minute. And then I was like, oh no, he's just a throwaway character. But I like the scene where she looks out from, I guess, the god's eyes and then sees a crowd, and it's just so cool.
It's such a great moment because it's like the moment that she's saying that she became a believer, really. And honestly, just watching the scene from her perspective, like, I can totally see that because she is looking out into the crowd and it's like, oh my goodness, it's all about humanity. And you can see all the people doing the things that they're doing and the music swells and I'm just like,
And the music was a nice alternate version of the original, of the main theme song, which I appreciate.
Yeah, like, it felt so human and... That's what this show is about, and we are
the
all
human,
together.
Yeah, no, this show is like really great at expressing that. And then let's see.
And then...
Speaking of, so I thought, unless you have anything more to say, I have a slight transition to Caffeus.
Go for it.
You have anything more to say. Okay, so my transition to Caffeus is, while I don't really think the child actress playing Kala really looks like Kala, I think that the drug lord and the drug lord's daughter look very similar. So good casting on that part. So, shall we speak about Caffeus to wrap this up?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Caffeus is in the van watching, I can't remember her name, but watching the little girl get the IV done. I love the framing of him in the van. It just looked really cool.
That was really nice. And he remembers back to his own childhood. When he and his mother were forced out of their village because of tribal politics.
Right.
I'm not sure exactly how it all went down.
I think it's something to do with the dad, because it ties back into earlier with people threatening the mom. And then, you know, they're like, oh, you need to send the boy away. And she's like, yeah.
Heck to the no.
Heck to the no. So we have a memory again of how much Caffeus's mother has sacrificed for her son.
Right. You know,
and then how he's willing to do stuff for her in return.
You know, we've seen some flashbacks of them some of them as little kids, but like we haven't seen all of them as little kids, and before like the show ends, I want to see all of them as little kids.
We don't see Leto as a little
kid. No, I mean we've seen Sun, we've seen Caffeus.
I know.
We've seen Kala.
But that's what I mean. Like, we haven't seen, like, Nomi or Leto as little kids.
Yeah.
Or anyone like that.
I want to. I feel like that.
It's always fun.
They'd all be cute kids.
Yeah.
Kids are just cute. That's how it is.
I'm trying to see if I have any more. Okay. So, back to Caffeus.
So, it's the girl's birthday.
It's the girl's birthday. She has a great party upstairs on top of a helicopter landing pad, because that's like obviously the most secure location ever. And I mean, seriously though, like nothing, like really, this dude has everything planned out to the max. But
dun, dun, dun.
Down below we have a I can hear my sister from my room. Sorry. Down below we see that there is someone who has been, shall we say, adulterating the drug lord's products, so he has to pay the consequences.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. That's like a lot. So the drug lord gets this line, I'll do anything for her. And that is such a divisive line, because sometimes it is like really sweet and meaningful, and sometimes it's used in like a really scary context.
Right.
Like in this context it is scary, because like you know he would do anything.
But
like
anything.
If Amanita says it, it's adorable and cute, because her version of anything is keeping Nomi safe without murdering or cutting off people's hands.
I mean, she set a building on fire, but presumably that's not the same level.
Presumably, she wasn't going to let everyone in the building die of a fire.
yeah.
Presumably.
So yeah, he has his own horrifying level of I will do anything to protect my family. I mean, again, this is a very common theme, I think, with you know, villains and stuff. Yeah. The day of my daughter's wedding and all that jazz. Yep.
All that jazz.
And, you know.
Keep it with the Chicago theme.
Referencing Chicago in this episode.
I mean.
Except Chicago the city.
Yeah. Will is in this episode.
But we get, you know, the scene where he's getting his henchmen to chop off this dude's hands and making Caffeus watch. Like, the bodyguard literally, like, Caffeus looking away and he's like, forces his head back. That's horrible. But I guess the point is very clear. You know, stuff is gonna go down when he puts that apron on his shirt.
Right.
So like, that was very much I know I reference this a lot, but Breaking Bad, when Gus puts on the apron and takes out a box cutter, you know what's gonna happen.
I've never even seen that show, brutal. And I know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Ugh. So, but yeah, even like. Like, you know, villains like, you know, Gus from Breaking Bad, or, what's his face, you know, Don Corleone in The Godfather, or, like, you know, a man has to provide for his family and do whatever they have to do. So, it's all very disturbing. It is. But for family! Yeah. So, like, that apparently makes it better?
I don't think that makes it better. So, I think, in fact, it kind of... I wouldn't say it makes it worse, but it kind of makes it worse a little bit. Like, he's doing this as his daughter is having his... He's doing this as his daughter is having her birthday party. And that's just really twisted.
On the day of my daughter's birthday.
Like, he, the drug lord, doesn't see any dissidence between who he is as the drug lord and who he is as a father. And that's really disturbing.
It's, yeah. It's a really interesting look at his, like, mental state.
Side note, though, maybe I was just in, like, a Broadway mode or whatever. But, like, the gangster sidekicks are wearing these, like, white button-down shirts and these black ties. And I'm like, oh, my God, they look like they come out of the Book of Mormon. Or they could be Get Mormon. Out. But more Get likely, out. It's the Book of Mormon.
Should have booted you out of his pockets when you name-dropped Glee. Get out.
You knew what you were signing up for. I am trash. I knew trash. What you were signing up for.
Anyway. If this sci-fi thing doesn't pan out, maybe we can do a musical podcast instead. Oh, well. No, that would take forever. God.
Be expensive.
But yeah, I think that's all the notes I had for this episode.
Yeah.
Any final remarks?
To me, this was a very plot-forward episode. We didn't get a lot of things to discuss, really. Like, oh, I wonder about this, I wonder about that. It was kind of straightforward, but things happened. A lot of things happened.
A lot of things happened.
You know, almost everyone had something to do, and a lot of them culminated in violence. So that...
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a lot of them.
At least three of them.
The ones that did were very brutal.
Right. And they all kind of came back to back. I remember last night, we were just talking about something else, and I mentioned that I'd been waiting for something to happen in the show when we were rewatching it. Because in my memory, all of this stuff, like all the violent moments back to back, happened pretty early on in the show, where Felix dies and then Nomi investigates and then Metzger dies and a random civilian sadly dies.
Well, I mean, you watch the show, I'm assuming, like, the way it's meant to be consumed, aka binging, so...
Yeah, I did... The first few episodes I watched slowly and then I binged the rest, but I remember this episode and everything that happens in it as happening earlier in the show, and I'm really surprised that it happened in episode 7 of 12, because it's definitely leading up to the end of the series. Not, you know, super close, but we're definitely getting there. And in my memory, I was really surprised when I watched it because it happened early on enough that I hadn't expected the violence. We'd gotten some violence in the show before, but nothing to this degree across plot lines like this.
Yeah,
we got gross moments in multiple plot lines.
Right. I was just kind of, I was waiting for Angelica and, like, Whispers to come back. So they finally came back. It was like, let's introduce Angelica and Whispers. Let's kind of introduce you to our main cast and kind of see them grow a bit. And then let's kind of jump back to Whispers. So,
right. So we're getting answers to the mysteries.
Yeah. I can't wait for everything to, like, finally be answered. I know it's not going to answer everything, but just to get more closure and understand more about this universe, what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I was never into Lost, but I can appreciate a show that gives answers relatively quickly. I don't have the patience to wait a long time to get answers. I just don't.
Well, they are making us wait.
But
it's a good wait.
You're giving us little pieces, and when you're watching, you presumably think that they have some kind of plan.
I think presumably has been the word of the day.
I think so, too.
In this podcast.
Presumably it has been.
Shut So, yeah, I guess that's it for Sense8, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
So, great episode. Really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. You said you thought it was pretty action-packed, yeah?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, especially for a show that is meant to be binge-watched. This is the kind of episode that you want. This is the kind of episode that makes me go, I have to watch the next episode now. You know, like...
We're at the halfway point. They gotta make us commit to the next half.
Yeah, so it was a very good episode. And things are only going to get better? Question mark?
Better! Yay! Okay. So, we're going to continue talking about Sense8 and other movies. Tune in each week on Sundays to hear us and, you know, rate us on iTunes and all that jazz.
All that
jazz.
You can
email us at...
I told you, Broadway is the theme.
No! And then you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. Not Maggie and Melissa's Musical Theater Podcast. No, that's not happening, Melissa. But, yeah, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. Find us on Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook, all that jazz. And, yeah,
I knew you'd get there in the end, Maggie.
I guess we'll see you next week. See you later.
Bye-bye.